Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you, encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Hi there. Today, I'm happy to have on the show a woman that is well known and respected for being skilled in supply chain management, cross-functional team leadership, areas of manufacturing, including procurement, logistics, product development, purchasing, negotiating, process engineering, and forecasting, just to touch on a few. Laura Muller is the supply chain director at Tektronix Component Solutions. She has over 20 years of experience in supply chain and several years' experience as a commodity manager. In addition to her full-time role, she is currently the co-chair of the Supply Chain Management Program through PCC and a member of the Oregon State University Advisory Board for their Supply Chain Management Program. Laura, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Okay. It sounds impressive when you read it like that, by the way.
It is impressive.
It's just me.
No, it's very cool. I'm excited to hear about your career specifically because I don't know anyone who is in supply chain. So I have so many questions that I want to ask. I know the audience wants to learn about this. So yeah. Can you tell us about how you got started and, you know, how you ended up being the director over at Tektronix?
From the beginning of my career, I didn't really start out thinking, oh, I want to be in supply chain. But I have always been attracted to business. And my family actually owned their own business. So I started working, as most children of entrepreneurial parents, when I was like seven. And I had a really strong work ethic. But I was always taught, you know, if there's something you want to go do, you should go do it. So I learned how to drive a forklift. I learned how to do things that maybe girls, quote unquote, don't do. And so I really got into supply chain when I was at ESI, which is Electro Scientific Industries, which was acquired by MKS a few years back here in Portland. And the reason I did is I'd been doing global customer service and export administration for a few years at ESI, and they were reorging and they were going to send me over to work in customer service in attached to global services. And I said, you know, I that's great. I like that. But I think I could really help out on the other side of the coin. Right. Nice. Like, I think I could go do that and I'd be good at it. And I asked our CFO, because he came to me and had a conversation with me on that topic. And he said, okay, go talk to the manufacturing manager. So I did. And I think it's initiative is what started me down the path.
Oh, absolutely. That's confidence and initiative. That's wonderful. And such a good lesson, because had you not spoken up, we wouldn't be sitting here. I mean, we would be here sitting here talking about a different role that you were taking, but maybe one that you didn't find as fulfilling.
Right, right. When I started in supply chain, it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't, you know, it was very much, they gave me metal machining and sheet metal and told me to go be a scheduler because I didn't know much about it. And so that was what they sent me to go do. And it was not a good, I mean, it was challenging. It wasn't pretty. I didn't like think, wow, this is my dream job. But the problem solving was there. And for me, that's what my career has been based on, is really problem solving. And coming from that entrepreneurial background and then being able to solve problems, that for me has been like the key to most of my success, as well as what really drives my spark. But, you know, at ESI, they sent me to school. I didn't have a college degree at ESI. So I graduated at 31, based on them paying for my finishing up of my degree. Mm-hmm. And, because the same gentleman who said, the CFO who said, well, what do you want to do? He also said to me, well, you know, that's great that you want to do that. We like you. You don't have a degree. So if you want to change where you are, you should go do X, Y, and Z. And one of those things was get a degree. He did write my recommendation to go back to school. And that, I mean, those were some pivotal conversations.
That's fantastic. So what does an average day look like for you in your, in your role?
Sure. So my average day is one where I'm not really doing tactical day-to-day. So when you think about supply chain, people think, oh, you're issuing purchase orders or you're doing this or doing that. In my role, I am driving the highest level of strategy and thinking about where do we want to drive our organization or what do we need to fix? Like what are our, what are the problems worth fixing? And that's where I kind of get in and, you know, there's certain day-to-day factory operational ticks that I have to complete and make sure that we're on track and flowing, because that's always the number one thing. And then the other side of that is what problems are worth solving? And then should we go do that? So should we improve our on-time delivery or should we do something strategic? And we apply our resources there. So that's kind of, that my day doesn't look typical day in and day out. And it's always also very important to me to take care of the people who work with for me in my organization. I have 23 direct, well, not direct, but I have 23 individuals that report into my team. Mm-hmm. And I take their, I take responsibility for them also. So if there's something that, you know, if someone offends someone on the dock, which this just happened, a gentleman was very COVID unfriendly and offended my employees. So I had to stop, listen, and then send a message that said, I we don't accept this. It's not part of our values. So nice. That can be my day.
Yeah. So it's a lot about looking at inefficiencies.
Yes. Yes.
What kind of skills do you think have that you have that set you up for success, you or someone looking to a career in this field?
Sure, sure. I call these my superpowers, and I have superpowers. And I think we all do. We just may not recognize them or may not take the time to see, to acknowledge our show up. And so where I show up is I listen. I will listen to whatever it is or whatever the problem is. And I'm very good at problem solving. So in my career, I've been, I was a champion problem solver at Lam Research, which is, you know, I felt really good that that was what I was given the opportunity to do. But I think it was really all about helping others think in a logical, deductive manner. And you have to do that in a way that you can remove the, not the humanity, but remove the emotion and get to the root. So that's one of my good skills, but also bring people along. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is good communication skills. And that doesn't mean speaking well. That means listening.
A buzzword that I've recognized in the, I don't know, recently is emotional intelligence. And this seems to equate to that, is like being able to listen as well as be respectful, as well as give others the opportunity to connect in a deeper way.
Yes, agreed. And I think that's part of what makes some individuals really good in leadership and other individuals maybe not as, I call it follow-worthy. Mm-hmm. Because when you lead people, they have to want to come along. And so when you listen, when they know you're listening and caring about what they need or what maybe their challenges are, you might not be able to fix everything. And that's not within my bailiwick to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I can be respectful of their perspective and understand what their challenges are, acknowledge it, but not necessarily be able to solve it. And you know, that is something that you have to just be able to step back and turn your ears up and your mouth off. I used to do a lot of work in China, and a gentleman said, two ears, one mouth. use them proportionately.
And I know this may sound a little bit sexist, but I think this is where women have just an innate ability, because we do that as mothers. We do that all the time in life. And if we apply it to work, it's just a natural talent that we have.
It is. I think one of the things, though, that I try very hard to do mm-hmm. is not to interrupt someone or not to talk too much. Mm-hmm. So I will always pause, even when I'm presenting, I will always pause and say, does anyone have any questions or are you aligned? Mm-hmm. And that's a term I use often because I think that brings people in is, are you aligned to what I'm saying? Do you get it? Now, as women, I will say this, I have been you know, spoken to in ways where I've thought to myself, huh, I'll bet that person probably wouldn't say that to anyone else, or that's probably not appropriate for them to have said, but I don't respond. Mm. And that's also a tough skill to learn.
That in itself is a response.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. When someone says something that is not polite or not appropriate or whatever, and especially in some of the industries that I have worked in my career, I have learned, and it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right. I have learned just to breathe. Mm-hmm. If someone says something, just take a deep breath and let that pause hang, because that's not a reflection on you.
That is such good advice.
Yeah. And that then allows you to calm down. Reaction and emotional intelligence, I'll just say, I think you shouldn't be unemotional or unpassionate about what you do, but the way you present yourself can take away your credibility if you become emotional. So your breathing, and this is something that you learn in certain, you know, like my son did karate when he was in grade school. And I loved that guy who taught my son karate because he could get all those kids to breathe. But that's what the trick is. It's the breathing. And you'll notice that when you get excited, your voice gets higher. So if you calmly expand, sit up a little higher, and just let it go.
Wow. Good tip. Let's talk strategy for a sec.
Sure.
How do you develop your strategy muscle, if you will, on thinking things strategically?
Great question. So a lot of times it just starts with the very basic of what is the problem statement? What is it? Is it a problem worth solving? What is the problem, or what is it that I need to go and do? So if you have a need to be strategic, you can't get down in the details and, you know, start talking about itsy bitsies, I call them. You won't get the traction. When you want to talk about strategy, you have to look out and say, okay, so I'm here with my head down. I need to look up and take a lay of the land of what is it that's around that I need to fix or whatever it is. So, I mean, I can use material examples that might bore people, but, you know, like let's say there's a specific kind of metal that you can't get, or it's not available because processing houses are shut down because of Texas, perhaps, or something, example like that. How am I going to take care of that? Or what am I going to do? Well, today I'm going to make phone calls and call people and do things. In the future, though, my strategy is going to be that I probably have a safety stock, and maybe I have my other supplier who also provides me some of these other metals. Maybe I have them hold a safety stock, and maybe I have this plan, this strategy of what will I do to mitigate so I don't ever have this issue again. So you think, today I have this problem. How do I get rid of this problem and also make sure that down the road I don't have that problem? And I do think that there's a need to teach strategic thinking more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Speaking of school, how hard was it for you to go back, and what degree did you end up going in for?
Yeah, so great question. I got married very young and at 22 and did not finish. I was this close to finishing my degree, but I'm holding up my fingers and it's like 3/4 of an inch. So I only had about 2 more terms to go. But I did get married and I decided I would go to work and I would finish later. And then I was 30 and I wasn't done. So after I had the mentor meeting with the CFO at ESI, I went back to school and got my bachelor's degree. I had a 2.5-year-old at home while I was studying managerial and organizational leadership. So I studied and I got my degree and I got a 4 point because I had to turn my grades in and I didn't want people to know that I was not effective. And then I always wanted to go back and get an MBA, but I graduated pregnant with my second child, walked across the stage, and I always wanted to go get my second degree, my master's, but I never had time. And unfortunately, after 18 years of marriage, I got a divorce. I still wanted to get my master's degree, but now I'm a single mom, so I couldn't go do that. And then later along the way, I met someone who is my incredible husband. And I said, hey, I've always wanted to go get my master's degree. And he said, why are you not doing that? And that's how I knew that I was going to marry him.
Yeah.
That is how I went and got my master's degree. And I talked about it enough for a year or two. Mm-hmm. And this is how I got myself to do it, because it's hard, Mary. And that's a great question. But I used my negotiating skills with myself. Mm-hmm. And I said to people, like my friends, I would say, I'm going to go get my master's degree. I'm thinking about it, and I'm going to get a master's in global strategy, because that's what I do anyway, is I globally manage supply chain. And finally, it got to a point where I had said this to enough people that they started to repeat it back to me. And then my husband was like, I don't understand why you're not getting a master's degree. And that's when I went back.
God, that's so great. Congratulations, by the way. I that's been on my bucket list, believe me.
It was on mine.
Yeah. You talked about negotiating.
Yes.
What tips do you have for women in business when we just bring up the word negotiating?
Yeah, I smile.
I cringe.
I'll be honest. So a couple of things that people have for negotiating or for that. One, it might be that it's public speaking, or it might be that it's asking for something you don't have, and it's fear. I probably am leaning forward into the fearless space more. So I have traveled throughout Asia on my own. I have spoken in front of a group of 40 Chinese engineers with a translator and told them that they better stop changing my designs. Mm-hmm. Right? So I guess I'm not afraid of negotiations, because I learned when I was a kid, my dad would say, the worst thing you will hear when you negotiate is the word no. That's all. And that's not a problem. That's just one word. And there's a but after that, usually. So if you never ask, and I've told many people who have reported to me and I've mentored, and I'm currently mentoring some students at OSU right now on their supply chain program. If the worst word you hear is no, you're doing it okay. It's all right. And no doesn't mean that it stops. And also, no one is uploaded with mind reading software. So if you think someone's going to come along and say, hey, would you really like this? Or would you like a raise? Or would you like, to go and do some new job? No one's going to do that. So you have to do that.
My dad always told me it's no until you ask. And then it's a maybe, or it's a yes, or it remains a no, but you don't know.
Well, I asked once for a different job at an organization that I worked at. And they said, they came back and they had interviewed everyone in the group, and I did not get that job, which is a good thing for me to learn. It's a good lesson that I learned. And the gentleman who said, hey, look, really liked you. You came in really high, but we have someone else who has more experience, and we're going to have to give him this job. And I said, that's fine. He said, well, I hope you don't take this the wrong way. I said, no, it's fine. But we all have choices to make. And so the choice I made was like 9 months later, I left and went and found a better job, a higher, you know, I went and did what I needed to do.
Right.
So if you ask for something and you don't get the answer you want, it may be a different kind of message for you.
Yeah. Oh God, this is fun. Okay. So in your job, you manage all aspects of manufacturing, you know, procurement, delivery, warehousing, efficiencies, et cetera. Do you have a favorite?
Okay. So I really like, there's two things I really like. I really like the idea of making things mm-hmm. a lot. And I always have like factories. So I have toured factories globally and it just, I'm passionate about that because there's process. It's just so awesome to know that everything is executing. Mm-hmm. All the things are on time. The flow is good. So I guess if you had to ask me what's the one thing I really like, it's a humming factory. But the second thing I really like is supplier management. Because when you're doing successfully and you're successfully managing a supplier, it's like this symbiotic goodness. Everyone's making money. Everyone's successful. And we're aligned
right.
for business. And that's what I like about what I do.
So I'm assuming COVID, when everything just like shut down and everything was still, you had to pivot.
Yeah.
Let's talk about pivoting for a sec.
Sure.
What does that mean when you have to react, and how could someone approach that in a constructive way?
Yeah. You know, honestly, COVID has been hard for so many people, and I feel very blessed for the journey I have been on during COVID. First of all, you know, in supply chain, there's a lot that has happened that has infringed upon people's ability just even to get toilet paper. That's mm-hmm. a supply chain issue. You know, you have to remain calm. I have found that if there's so many ways that COVID touches us that is not like anything else we've ever experienced. So I actually interviewed remotely, virtually, and took this role during COVID. And so you can adapt, you can change, you can do things, but you also have to acknowledge that you can't do things as freely as you want to. I have actually been very fortunate to be able to help other states and other organizations through COVID because of the Supply Chain Advisory Council. We've actually participated to help coach some states with how do you find certain things, because they don't problem solve and get outside their box. So that's been really interesting. So I think really it's been a patience and self care time. Because mm-hmm. everyone has, again, this touches you in your life in a way that nothing has ever done. So I've been very careful with, you know, just being professionally compassionate.
Yeah. What are some key learnings from some of the challenges you've faced over the years in business?
Well, you know, one of the challenges earlier in my career was I looked really young. Yeah. And so I have been asked to go get coffee before a meeting. Someone sent me to go get coffee from the company that was there to meet with me. And they didn't know who I was. And I went and got coffee. And I came back. And then we all sat down. And then we all got interviewed. We all said who we were and what our roles were. And this guy turned like four shades of red. So I learned that people should know their audience. So that was one of my lessons. You know, the other lesson is, if it's not the right path I'm on, I'll go down a different path. I can go down a different path. Mm-hmm. I can pivot. I've had to do that in my personal life, and I've had to do that in my professional life. And change is not bad.
Right.
I don't have a problem with driving change myself or following change if it presents itself, because we're still going to be on the other side.
Yeah. I think that's critical for a lot of people. And obviously the last year has proven that is having the ability to know you can't control change. Change is inevitable. It's how you react and how you adapt that really impacts life, work, it and is. Personal. What would you say if there are any misconceptions about a career in supply management?
Well, you know, when I look at what I have done for my career and I think there is a challenge to see that there aren't as many women in this type of work. There are times when I feel that I'm able to get things done because I have certain concerns, but I also have certain intuitions. And those are, again, that's part of my superpowers. Those are things that I can lean on a bit or ask questions of people and connect people into the why better. So the misconception might be that I'm not an engineer. Okay. Yeah. I'm not an engineer. I know when I don't know. That's my superpower too, is that knowing when you don't know, knowing when you should ask for some help, knowing when you should pivot and go. I think just being aware, but you have to get past your emotions to do that.
Those are some great superpowers. You speak Spanish. I saw that. How beneficial would you say having a second language is to someone who might go down this career path?
So, you know, I don't think it's a necessity, but I will say global awareness, global cultural awareness. So a quick story. I have worked, in fact, I worked with a gentleman at two different companies, and he was from Monterrey, Mexico. In fact, I got him his second job at the company I worked for because I said, you guys grew up in the same town, to the director who was hiring for this job. You should hire this guy. But he and I would speak Spanish when we would travel, and it was great because we'd go to China. We would debrief in English, and they would debrief in Chinese. So we would debrief in Spanish, which was great because no one could understand us. Except for one time in Taiwan, there was a woman who spoke Spanish, who was Taiwanese. That was the only time that ever happened. But I was culturally aware of my coworker, and he was a great individual to work with. He was very smart and capable, but there were things that were challenging for him because it was a second language. So I think having a language for myself, when I speak Spanish, it's hard for me. Like I have to actively listen and then I have to translate and then it can come out or I can write it. And I'm pretty good with Spanish, especially after I've been there on vacation for 2 weeks or something. My Spanish improves, but I learned how hard it is for him just to say, you know, izquierda or derecha, because he gets that confused or used to when we would travel. And that's left and right. But if you're trying to think and translate and walk and move and travel, that's a lot. So I think that it taught me how to be more sensitive to a global environment and more aware of people's body language. So I was in South Korea once negotiating with a very, very, very large battery manufacturer by the name of Samsung. And I was in a meeting and the gentleman were not happy with each other. And I had brought someone with me who spoke Korean. And I said to him, I said, are they fighting? And he said, oh yes, they've been fighting the whole time. He didn't tell me this, of course, right? Because I didn't ask directly for it. And that's part of what happens in business globally is unless you say it directly, you don't get that. And I said, well, I can tell by their body language that they're very upset with each other. He goes, oh, you're so smart, Laura. Yes, they don't like each other at all. And they've said bad names to each other throughout the whole meeting. And I thought, you know, I'm not getting what I want out of this. So we took a break and we kind of joked a little bit and came back. And I asked him to translate what I would say. And I said, I'm so glad that we're all here. It's so important for us to be able to make progress. And it's so valuable for us to be able to work with your company. And I wasn't doing it to scold them. I was doing it just to bring everyone back together and just remind them why we were there. And so that to me is also that global mindset that. So speaking a foreign language, I think has taught me a little bit of humility because I do get the words wrong sometimes. But I was brought up that we all had to have a second language because my dad told me that we were going to be in a global world someday. And we are.
Yeah, no, that speaks to global language on so many different levels. Wow. Okay. We talked earlier about the gentleman who was your mentor. Can we come back to that and
sure.
Tell me about your working with him, how that evolved. Was it like a clear, like, I need a mentor, you're a mentor? Or did it just develop over time? Did he see potential in you? And what advice do you have for others who might need or want a mentor?
So that's a great question. And I really think that mentoring for me is something that I do regularly and with purpose. That particular mentor was the CFO of ESI and probably took the time. It wasn't like I didn't go to him and say, hey, I'd really like a mentor. He saw me leaving a meeting, went over, tapped me on the shoulder and said, did you know you're the only person in this room without a college degree? And I said, no, I didn't, but thanks for letting me know. And he said, I mean, what was I supposed to say? I mean, I was like caught off guard completely. Right. I said, no, I didn't know that. But thank you for letting me know, you know, kind of, oh, and I said, well, what would you do? And he said, well, I'll think about that and I'll get back to you. And then later he sent me a note, an email, and he said, you should go talk to so-and-so in HR about our program for paying for education. And I said, okay. So I did. And then I went back later and I emailed him later and I said, I went and talked to her. And by the way, I'm probably going to need some letters of recommendation. Would you mind being so kind as to write a letter of recommendation? And he said, sure, no problem. So he did. I don't know to this day what he said in that, but I know it was good because they said, we saw your CFO send a letter of recommendation. You know, later I just kind of kept him informed. But he told me that, you know, look, we like you. Like he would say like nice things. Like he would say, you're good at what you do. You can get things done and create velocity. That's another thing that I'm pretty good at. And so you should want to stay here because we would like you to, but we need you to do this in order to do that. So I stayed at ESI for almost 10 years and I really think that part of it was, he said something to me, but I then also went back and asked later, can I go and work on the, in supply chain? And he said, yes, go talk to so-and-so. Now you have to be willing to go talk to people. That's a part of what mentoring is about. And I think it's harder for younger people because there's a lot of phones and there's not as much communication directly. Mentoring is really about developing a relationship with someone, you know, that is sincere. And I'm right now I'm mentoring three people. I'm mentoring someone that works in my organization who I meet with every other week, and he's newer to supply chain. So I help him develop his mental model of not just the tacticals of what he's doing, but the why. What does that mean? How does that connect into the system of ERP and manufacturing? I also am mentoring two students at Oregon State University in the supply chain program, one in the master's program and one in the bachelor's program. And for them, I'm teaching them kind of, well, one individual, she's near and dear to my heart because she's quieter. And it reminds me of me when I was younger. There was a time when I was quieter. And you have to look up. You have to lift your head up. You have to think and you have to talk to people. And she's doing a great job. But I, you know, she has shared with me some of her challenges and kind of quandary of COVID, not feeling connected at school, you know, not necessarily feeling connected into what she's doing. So I've been able to say, you know, look, think of how the bigger picture works and connect her into some people to talk to. Because that's one of the things that we can do for one another is help.
Ah, that's so great. What would you tell your 20-year-old self if you could go back in time?
You should have gotten your master's degree sooner. Just because if I talk about that for just a second, it really took my business understanding and acumen and just really helped me understand the connectivity of how everything fits in. And I'd studied accounting before and I'd studied finance before, but where I was at in my career when I did my MBA, it just made everything fall into place. And it also was something that was interesting to me because a lot of the students were younger than me and didn't have, you know, as much experience. And so I still learned though, and I learned from them. So it was, that was something I was unexpected.
When you're hiring or looking, to add someone new to the team or even mentoring, what advice do you tell people, or what do you hope they deliver in a job interview?
Well, you know, you can train people to do things. You can train people to do tasks, but you have to be able to get along and you have to be able to work as a team and you have to be able to sometimes say I'm wrong and do something different. So to me, I think it's the softness, right? It's can you fit into our culture? Too many times people think, oh, they've got this capability and they know this language and they know this, you know, engineering discipline and so on and so forth. So they're clearly going to be able to fit in the team. And I've worked with some very smart people who really are hard to work with. And that means you don't get as much done. And you also don't like your job.
Right. What's next for you? Where do you see yourself in 3 to 5 years?
Well, so I'm not really sure. I'm interested in leadership. And I took the job at Tektronix as a director of supply chain here at CSO because they have kind of a path that agrees with me in terms of being able to expand my career. I enjoy organizational success. And that's what I really, if at the 50,000 foot level, it's organizational optimization and bringing the people with that. So that's what I see myself doing. And I'm excited because it's not just Tektronix, but also Tektronix's parent company, Fortiv, which is located up in Washington, but they are doing the right things. It aligns with my values. So I feel good. That's what I'm planning on doing is continuing to be awesome.
Oh my God. I have enjoyed this so much. I've learned so much. I have great respect for you. You've left just like oodles of tips and nuggets. So thank you for that. How can someone get in touch with you if they wanted to reach out and learn more?
Yeah. So I am on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn profile is pretty thorough, but it only goes back 10 years, as Mary now knows. and it's Laura, L-O-R-A, Muller, M-U-L-L-E-R. And I'm out and about, even in COVID, still attending virtually, you know, meetings with the community and in supply chain and doing other things. So look out for me.
Hey, it's been awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and willingness to share your story.
Well, thank you for having this kind of sharing opportunity. I think it's
Wait, I forgot to ask you one question. What's we that? Have to end on this one. What does To Be Bolder mean to you?
To Be Bolder. Okay, so To Be Bolder is different than lean in.
Right.
To Be Bolder is to look up. To Be Bolder is to take that next step, lean forward with a stride, not just lean in. Awesome. Is that good?
That's fabulous.
Okay. It was such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bbolder.com. That's the number 2, little b, bolder.com.